Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description. Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw Count Out, the only pro wrestling countdown show that can be found here at youtube.com/Steven Larson. And available wherever fine podcasts are. Be sure to hit that subscribe button, whether on YouTube or on the podcast app that you use, because it A, helps boost the profile of the show, and B, lets you know whenever there's new Going In Raw content.
Correct.
We're also on Patreon at patreon.com/Steven Larson, where we offer up live streams, bonus episodes, voting on things on the show, and the ability to put your video questions on the dirt sheet and the t-shirt. You got an exclusive t-shirt. Can't get anywhere else.
Correct.
I know that for a fact because I keep them all in that little blue cabinet over there.
Correct.
Anyways.
We're also Pro Wrestling Tees. Speaking of t-shirts, prowrestlingtees.com/goinginraw10designs.
Mm-hmm.
More coming.
Yeah.
I mean.
It's on the way. It's on the way.
I know I sound like a broken record at this point, but
it's on the way. We said we were going to be on Spotify a long time. That never happened.
We had a whole thing about it. Road to Spotify.
Road to Spotify. That road has reached dead end, Larson.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, speaking of dead ends, tag teams often reach dead ends.
And then they break up.
Illustrious careers. And then, yes, as you say, they broke it. They break up.
We most recently saw this past Monday night on Raw. And we saw Cass revealed as Enzo's attacker and said, no more Enzo and Cass.
He said, I wanted you to know how stupid you are.
Yeah.
Man, they've known each other since they're literally in like elementary school. They've known each other.
I'm sure they're still friends.
You think so?
Backstage,
just said, you're stupid.
Well, that was on television.
You call me stupid all the time.
We're still characters.
Friends. We're still friends.
I don't think I've ever called you stupid.
No, that'd be messed up. Not like for reals.
No.
But anyway, so that got us thinking, what other big, high-profile tag team breakups, what are the most quality tag team breakups in wrestling history?
Yeah.
When did tag team wrestling start? What was the first tag team match?
You're instantly getting way off topic. Do you think a swerve happened during that first tag team match?
Did Frank Gotch and George Hackenschmidt swerve each other? I don't know. I don't think they were ever.
Give me a quick answer before we move on.
All right. History of tag team wrestling on Wikipedia. In 1901, the first tag team match was held in the United States in San Francisco. Oh, see, we should have shot this wherever that was. Let's see here. Yeah, there's no info about that though, but I want to know more about that one from 1901. Anyways, different time, different place. Let's get started with this countdown, Larson.
Yes.
Number 10.
10.
Cactus Jack and Mikey Whipwreck. Of course, this is ECW.
Yeah. We talked about Mikey Whipwreck in a previous episode, and he got a start in ECW just by working on the ring crew.
Yeah.
Volunteer.
He was truly, the fans' representative.
Yes, in exchange for their work, several people on the ring crew would get to, try out moves and stuff in the ring before and after shows.
Yeah.
And Mikey Whipwreck was noticed by Joey Styles. Joey Styles brought Mikey to Paul Heyman's attention. Mm-hmm. And Paul Heyman said, okay, let's train him. And Mick Foley ended up training Mikey Whipwreck.
Yes.
I remember it was. It was the we did a count out about something like biggest championship upsets or something like
yeah,
that.
Where
Mikey Whipwreck beat Sandman for the title, and one of the first people to come out
to
congratulate Mikey was Cactus Jack.
Right.
When the rest of the locker room came out, they were very wary of Jack at that moment.
Crazy.
Nonetheless, fast forward a bit to December 1995, Mikey is in a winner-takes-all match against Too Cold Scorpio, where both the television title and the tag titles are up for grabs.
Scorpio held those with Sandman.
Yes, the tag titles, correct. Cactus Jack helped Mikey win that match thanks to a dirty deed.
He gave him a dirty deed.
Helped Mikey pick up both belts.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cactus Jack declared that he would be Mikey's partner.
Right.
Mikey, I guess being the upstanding young gentleman that he was not happy with the way he won that match.
Yeah, didn't want to win by nefarious means.
Yeah, so that caused tension between Mikey and Cactus.
Yeah.
Student and mentor.
Yeah, well, Cactus Jack was also crazy.
He was.
Super crazy.
So this all came to a head on the February 6th episode of Hardcore TV when the Eliminators used Total Elimination to beat Mikey Whipwreck.
Yeah.
After the match, Raven comes in, starts beating up Mikey. Mm-hmm. And at first it seems like Cactus Jack is making the save. He pulls Raven off him, you know, like pushing him to the opposite side of the ring. He says something, Raven just poses.
Yeah.
And then Cactus Jack goes and starts beating on Mikey.
Yeah.
Swerve complete.
Yeah. It was a great thing, too, is that, you know, you're sort of thinking, okay, well, what's your motivation here? You know, Jack might be aligning with Raven. And on Hardcore TV did these really, really great end of episode promo montages.
Yeah, like probably go to people in the locker room. You have 2 minutes, you have 90 seconds, you have 3 minutes. That's what it felt like, really.
And it was all like, you know, promo. Sometimes it would go back to a previous promo, like it would pick up where it left off. But it was all done to what sounded like Dick Dale music.
Kind of, yeah.
The
surf-type music.
Surf-type music that you'd hear. Because, you know, this... when was this? 94? So this was post-Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's where they got their inspiration from. Because, you know, Pulp Fiction kicks off with that great Miserloo. And they were really creative. And I was telling you this off camera, you know, we've seen our fair share of, you know, YouTube productions when it comes to wrestling. You know, I mean, before the big adpocalypse or the wrestling algorithm, whatever you want to call it, for YouTube, you know, YouTube is a viable way for several indie wrestling federations to make a decent amount of change, WCPW being sort of the most prominent one. But a lot of these others, like sort of indies, could use, and WCPW, they have huge production value, so I'm not talking about them here.
Yeah.
But we've seen others that I'm not going to name that could stand to look at some of these old Hardcore TVs from ECW as a source of inspiration for some creativity, because it's not like they didn't have better cameras back then. They didn't have better anything back then. It's just everything was so wonderfully... there was so much energy to everything they did. The funny thing about this, so in one of those promos, taking the scenic route once again, one of those promos at the end was Cactus Jack and Raven, and Cactus Jack was sort of explaining his motivation.
Kind of.
For his swerve on Mikey Whipwreck.
It had to do with Doritos.
It had to do with Doritos.
So apparently what was happening was that Cactus, seeing that his former student was low on funds, would give him rides.
Yeah.
Help him pay tolls.
Yes.
From show to show, and he'd say, okay, Mikey, here's some money. Go into the gas station and buy, you know, some food for the trip.
Yeah.
And so after Cactus would finish pumping gas, he'd come into the car, and there were two bags of Doritos.
Yeah.
Which he objected to because, as Cactus Jack said, he had an eating disorder.
Yes.
And so...
it feels so much like the relationship between you and I.
Like, well, I wouldn't buy Doritos.
Like,
I'd buy,
if you
like,
did, you'd know. I'm like, you know what? What do you do?
We'd have
like,
Quest bars.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you want to go to McDonald's, I'm like, oh, damn it. You know I can't resist McDonald's.
And right after he says that, there's a really quick cut back to Mikey. He says, what? Doritos? Back to Cactus and Raven.
But the great, like, Mikey was already showered and dressed.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad, I'm heartened that Mikey Whipwreck took it all kind of in stride.
Yeah, he seemed to get over things pretty quickly.
He was just kind of curious as to, really? Doritos is the reason why you just did that to me?
Yeah.
So, and another thing that kind of heartened me was during the actual swerve, when Cactus Jack is holding Mikey Whipwreck, Raven comes over with a chair and gives him the lightest love tap with that chair I've ever... that literally might have been, I'm not going to call it weak, the safest chair shot I've ever seen in my life.
Yes.
Raven must have really liked Mikey Whipwreck.
Could be. Raven is just a very safe worker.
That could be. Raven, there was so much great about it. Like, just, we were sort of skimming through the episode for research before this. There was so much great about it. That was also the final promo was Perry Saturn shaving his head.
Yeah.
Because he had, like, a wonderful mullet.
Yeah.
That was great.
Getting back to this feud, they had their blow-off match at Big Ass Extreme Bash in March of 1996.
Great title for a pay-per-view.
Which saw...
was that a pay-per-view or just...
no,
like
I think
a,
it's just like a
TV event type thing. Okay.
Which saw Mikey go over in Cactus Jack's last match in ECW.
Mm-hmm. Number nine.
Nine.
Hollywood Blondes. So this, of course, is Steve Austin prior to him becoming Stone Cold.
Yep.
And Flying Brian Pillman. They were put together. So if I recall correctly...
It's kind
correctly,
of a weird thing where they were put together kind of casually at first.
Yeah. But then they started, you know, it was one of those things where, so Austin, you know, Austin got the impression they were going to start pushing him for a U.S. title run. And he comes in one day, and he thought that that was going to be the plan. And instead, they decided to put him with Pillman. And he's like, well, that's a bunch of crap. So it was sort of a rocky start. But it really seemed to be the case of two guys making the absolute most of their opportunity, because they started to learn that they worked really well together. Their styles were very complementary towards each other.
Yes, and from what I understand, is they were the ones that came up with the Hollywood Blondes name.
Right.
They were the ones that came up with the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, all the little aspects of their gimmick.
They had fantastic chemistry.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
So while they first started... teaming together in October 92, they really didn't make their official Hollywood Blondes debut till January of the following year.
Yeah.
March of 93, an episode of Power Hour.
And it's a shame, honestly. WWE Network doesn't have, from what I can tell, any of the WCW Saturday nights on their network, nor do they have
Power Hour.
Power Hour.
But on Power Hour, Austin and Pillman defeated Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas to win the NWA World Tag Team Championships. They had, you know, they were involved in a feud. Hollywood Blondes held on those belts after that. They moved on to a feud with the Four Horsemen, high profile stuff. And this was right after Ric Flair came back to WCW from a year long stint in WWF. And so WCW gave Flair a television segment called A Flair for the Gold, because apparently he could come back to WCW but not wrestle
there was an NWA pay-per-view when he first won the gold, and it was called Flair for the Gold.
Yeah,
so they really ran that phrase.
They really liked that pun.
They did.
And so during the program between the Horsemen and the Hollywood Blondes, the Hollywood Blondes started their own segment called A Flair for the Old.
That's awesome.
So they would impersonate I believe it was Arn and Flair.
Mm-hmm.
And this led to a match at Clash of Champions 23, where the Horsemen won. It was a 2-out-of-3 falls match. The Horsemen ended up winning, but because in the final fall, Barry Windham interfered.
Oh, damn you, Windham.
And that started a feud between Windham and Flair.
Okay.
Not long after that, Pillman hurt his ankle. There was a scheduled title match at Clash of Champions 24 that he couldn't make. So instead, Austin had to team with Lord Steven Regal and drop the titles to Arn Anderson and Paul Roma.
Mm.
Pretty Paul Roma.
Yeah.
And of course, now without the titles and with Pillman injured, they kind of just casually split the team up for a while.
Yeah.
Austin finally got his United States title program against Dustin Rhodes.
Yeah.
And then after that, they just kind of put them back together again.
Yeah,
a few more feuds until at this point, Austin's manager was Colonel Rob Parker.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so on October 30th, 1993, an episode of
Saturday Night,
not Power Hour.
Again, no network doesn't have WCW.
No
Saturday Night.
So after they won a match, Parker comes out, says, "Good job, Steve Austin. Mm-hmm. Way to win the match."
Yeah.
Pillman didn't like that.
He took exception to that because Parker was given love and attention to Austin, not Pillman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So apparently Parker brought up Pillman's knee injury and said something to the extent of, "If you were a racehorse, they would put you down."
Whoa!
Or he would put him down.
Yeah.
Parker, that is, would put Pillman down. You know, in response, Pillman, upset.
Mm-hmm.
He took it too. Colonel Parker, Austin, defended his manager, attacked Pillman, Austin heel turn.
Yeah.
And this would lead to a fairly underwhelming feud.
Yeah. It all revolved around a chicken suit.
Pretty much. So on the January 14th, 1994 episode of WCW Saturday Night, Pillman and Austin had a match.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe if Pillman won this match, then the chicken suit match would happen at Clash of Champions, correct?
Yeah, and he did win, but then Austin attacked him from behind, and they tried to put the chicken head on him.
Yeah, and they kind of did halfway, and they seemed content with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Moved on.
So then Pillman took on Colonel Rob Parker in a loser must wear a chicken suit match at Clash of Champions 16.
No, it was 26.
Was it 26?
It was 26,
26,
yeah.
Okay. There was some interference from Big Boss Man.
The Boss.
Who was called The Boss at the time. And that led to Pillman going over. He got one with the roll up. And so on the next episode, the following episode
of Saturday night,
we're assuming Colonel Parker wore that chicken suit.
But we won't know because it's not on the network.
It's not on the network. We got no confirmation for that.
No confirmation.
They did actually have an Austin versus Pillman blow-off match.
Kind of.
This was 8 months later.
Yeah, but they brought up... I was watching this match on YouTube, and they brought up their split several times. So it's still a part of the story they're telling.
Things moved slower back then.
Guess so. So yeah, on September 3rd, 1994, they had another match. I'm not sure if it was their last, but it was one. And in a DQ after Austin put Pillman in the Tree of Woe and was stomping on him, referee Nick Patrick gave Austin a five count to stop. Austin refused. He got disqualified.
Oh, no.
Out came Ricky Steamboat
the dream.
And attacked Austin because this is all leading up to their match at Halloween Havoc 94 for the U.S. title.
Yeah, kind of weird, man, because like Pillman, when we were doing research for this entry, I was going through all the pay-per-views, and
he kind of disappeared from television.
He was
or
he
pay-per-view.
Was, well, that's the crazy thing is that so he was on all these Clash of Champions, and he was like on Saturday nights and stuff, and I'm assuming he's on whatever Power Hour is. But for whatever reason, they never use him on pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's weird.
It was like kind of sparingly. It was just absolutely weird. I don't know what the deal. I don't know. I have no idea what the deal with that is. He had like one match with a. Regal, which went to a time limit draw for the television championship at later or mid 94, I think.
And it looks like February 94, he was in a Thunder Cage six-man tag match. It was himself, Dustin Rhodes, and Sting against Paul Orndorff, Rick Rude, and Steve Austin.
That was in February?
Yeah.
Yeah, but then later on in the year.
Then he had the match against Regal in April, and then November. That's
nothing
ECW.
Until November. Oh, that's ECW. Okay, yeah. Oh, my goodness. I mean, I know he had I think he had some injuries here and there.
Even 95, there's not a lot. This is all on Pro Fight DB. I don't know how thorough this is, but even 95, there's not a ton.
Very thorough. Anyways, number eight.
Eight.
Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio.
Yeah. So, No Way Out. What year was this?
Let me just say this. The greatest thing about this particular breakup is it eventually led to a. Basically custody papers on a pole type match. They weren't literally on a pole. I'm saying that metaphorically, but this all led to...
Wasn't it a ladder match?
Wait, were the custody papers actually hovering above the ring?
I thought so. Yeah, ladder match.
Oh, God. Oh, that's terrible. Anyways, yeah. So basically, I mean, Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio, they go back, obviously, always. They're basically family. And they had some amazing encounters in WCW over the Cruiserweight Championship.
Halloween Havoc 97.
Was a fantastic match. Just an absolutely fantastic match. So, of course, once Eddie made his way over to WCW and Ray made his way over to WCW, it wasn't that long before we see these guys start mixing it up. The main brunt of their feud sort of revolved around WrestleMania 21. So at the No Way Out previous... Guerrero teamed up with Mysterio and defeated the Basham brothers to win what would sadly be his last WWE title, which was the tag team championships.
Yes.
He had actually had it three times before that. This was Mysterio's third reign.
This led to a match, surprisingly, not as tag team partners, but against each other at WrestleMania 21. Because Eddie wanted to quote, bring the house down.
Yeah. So it was, hey, let's steal the show. You and I. So they went in as tag team champions, partners. They went in as opponents.
Yes.
In sort of an exhibition, a respect bout.
Yes.
Pretty much.
And it was good.
Yeah, it was great. Mysterio
was
won.
Yes.
And that sort of, got Guerrero a little bit, disheartened.
Yes.
Frustrated with that.
And those feelings intensified.
Snowballed.
Yes. April 21st, an episode of SmackDown. They lost the tag team championships to Johnny Nitro and Joey Mercury, M&M. And then next week they had a rematch, lost that.
Mm-hmm.
And then starting there is when Eddie really started to turn heel.
Yeah.
It culminated on the May 5th, 2005 episode of SmackDown when he attacked Mysterio.
So right as this happened, I think it was right after this. That's when he stopped coming out in the lowriders. He used more ominous music.
Yeah.
He came out slow walking with a frown on his face.
Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was awesome.
Which led to the custody papers on a ladder match.
So around this time, Eddie started referencing or insinuating that there was some sort of secret he had about La Familia, and essentially he goes on to tell, I think, Dominic, Rey Mysterio's kid, Dominic. Eddie Guerrero basically says, I had a kid out of wedlock. I offered that child up for adoption to Rey Mysterio and his wife.
They had trouble conceiving on their own.
And so essentially, Eddie is Dominique's papi. That's what the thing was. And Eddie wanted, because Rey was such a butthole, Eddie wanted custody back. Instead of going through normal legal channels, which admittedly is expensive and a pain in the ass,
yeah,
they decided to put the custody papers up, suspended above
a ring with ladders all around,
yeah,
and they would fight for it,
right? Which I'm not even sure is legal, but anyways, that of course Rey Mysterio was able to keep his child.
Yes,
he won that particular match. And it says here that the on the September 9th episode of
SmackDown,
their feud ended when Guerrero gained a victory over Mysterio in a steel cage match. Sadly, it was only 2 months later that Eddie Guerrero died. He was found in his hotel room in Minneapolis. I didn't know he was found by Chavo. Oh, that's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
He attempted CPR. He's only 30. Golly, he's my age. He's only 38 years old.
Wow.
Yee, willikers. So, yeah, that was I honestly, like, that's that's a feud. It's so ridiculous. But Guerrero, they played it so straight, and Guerrero's heel persona was so entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
He gave everything he had.
Did. He always
everything
did.
He did. And it was very entertaining. It's like, you know, it's wrestling, you know, it's cheesy. But the fact that they had, you know, this is a storyline straight out of Over the Top.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't go wrong, man, if it's Over the Top. Number seven.
Seven.
The Hardy Boys.
I kind of remember watching this match.
Okay.
The Hardy's first match as the Hardy Boys when they defeated Kai and Tai.
Mm-hmm.
September 27th, 1998. So that had been when we were living in L.A., sharing an apartment.
Yeah.
I kind of remember watching this.
Yeah.
And then not long after that, they had themselves a new manager.
Yeah, Doc Hendricks, baby. Why couldn't they have just called him Michael Hayes?
I don't know.
Very sad.
I'm still confused by that.
Anyways,
obviously, that didn't work
that
out.
That did not last
that
very long
out.
At all. That did not last at all.
So after a brief run as members of the new brood, they went out on their own, eventually forming Team Extreme.
With Lita. And they were super
over. They were
so over.
They had the tag team championship six times.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And that, you know, run of success came to an abrupt end on August 12th, 2002, during an episode of Raw, when I guess tensions were mounting.
Mm-hmm.
Because at this point, Jeff had started a singles run.
Yeah.
And was doing well for himself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
While Matt... Not so much. So during a match against Rob Van Dam,
there is an incident.
Matt comes in after a ref bump and gives Jeff a twist of fate, costing him that match.
Yeah.
And citing, you know, jealousy.
Yeah.
Essentially, that is why he turned on his brother.
Right.
Matt was then moved over to SmackDown,
mm-hmm.
where he dubbed himself Matt Hardy V1.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, this?
Yeah, I think it was.
He's still doing that.
Yeah,
it's V1.
Wonderful.
Oh,
I get it now. V1.
Yeah, V1.
Okay. Yeah, nice.
And that was just the first time he turned on his brother.
Yeah. Like, it's amazing how dated. I mean, it's not surprising, but when he used to come down as V1 and they had the little reel player.
Oh, that was
thing,
great. I love that.
And they would make it all jumpy and pixely.
I know. Even like even
that's what we had for video back then.
But even that was like 4 years after Real Player was even a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
They were just getting around to knowing what internet was back then.
I know.
Then.
And they, no one had Twitter. Of course, Twitter wasn't a thing then. So
right,
everybody
yeah,
had
yeah.
their own web pages.
Yeah,
it was
yeah,
all
exactly,
www.hardyboys.com
yeah.
and stuff like that. That's why this was WrestleMania 17. And everybody comes out. Everybody has their websites.
Oh, that's funny. That's hilarious.
It was interesting. But that wasn't the last time he turned on his brother.
Nope.
2009 Royal Rumble.
Fast, yeah, this is fast forward a ways after the whole Matt and Lita and Edge thing.
All that. At the Royal Rumble, Jeff Hardy had a match against Edge. Matt Hardy came in with a steel chair, hit his brother with it, let Edge win the WWE Championship. On the following episode of SmackDown, Matt said, "No more Hardy Boys."
Yeah.
Which obviously hasn't, you know, stuck.
Yeah, no, absolutely no. Matt sure gave Edge a lot of things, huh?
Yeah.
A lot of prizes.
So they
sorry, go ahead.
They
wonderful.
They had another feud. They had an Extreme Rules match at WrestleMania 25. Matt won that.
Mm-hmm.
A stretcher match. Matt won that.
Mm-hmm.
They were split up by the 2009 draft. Nonetheless, they had an I Quit match at Backlash of that year, which Jeff won,
mm-hmm.
but not finished. Matt prevented Jeff from winning the WWE Championship at Judgment Day.
Mm-hmm. Of course, they went on and became the winningest tag team in time and space.
Yes.
And
during their expedition for gold.
Exactly. And now they're back together as a tag team, and they're in the hunt once again for their
waiting for
raw tag team
legal proceedings to play out before they can return to the Broken Universe gimmick.
They're just waiting on all that merch money, man. Ooh,
at which point, Jeff Hardy will get a Universal title shot, and mm-hmm. I'm sure Matt will be maybe vying for the Intercontinental title.
Yeah, maybe wonderful.
And there's actually a much better chance that Matt would win that title as opposed to Jeff, because Jeff's not winning the Universal Championship for Brock Lesnar at all.
You don't think it's going to happen?
The match may happen, just not winning.
Maybe not. I don't know. It depends. Yeah, maybe not. Probably not.
No.
I don't know. Vince really likes Jeff.
I know.
So it wouldn't surprise me if, like, after this whole Roman Brock thing is done with.
Oh, after that. But I mean, like, the rumors were saying that it was, you know,
between now and Mania?
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, no. Number six.
Six.
The Mega Powers, brother.
This is a feud they took 2 years to brew and play itself out, culminating at WrestleMania 5.
In fairness, every feud back then took at least about that amount of time because there were so few TVs.
That's not true.
Yeah, it is. Do they have weekly TV?
Yeah.
What'd they have?
It was on USA. I remember watching it.
Really?
It felt weekly.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, sorry.
Why did stuff take so long then?
Because it was...
They had less pay-per-views.
Yes, they did.
They only had 4 pay-per-views a year. So, and then there's only like... One of those had singles matches. Like everything else was always like tag matches.
Yeah, Survivor Series. It was all Survivor Series matches.
That was terrible. Survivor Series was terrible back then.
Yeah, it wasn't that great of an idea.
No, it wasn't.
No.
Oh, that man, oh.
So the Mega Powers started as an alliance between the two hottest faces in WWF at the time.
Yeah, man.
Macho Man Randy Savage, Hulk Hogan.
Oh, yeah.
Started October 3rd, 1987 during an episode of Saturday Night's Main Event. Macho Man was taking on Honky Tonk Man for the Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
Honky Tonk Man was up to no good. Miss Elizabeth went backstage, came out with Hulk Hogan, and made the save on Macho Man.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, they apparently didn't really have any televised matches. They were wrestling as a tag team on the house show circuit.
Because they didn't do TV back then.
They did do TV.
Why did things take so long then if they had weekly TV?
This is called good storytelling, Steve.
No, come on.
They made their televised tag team debut, SummerSlam 88. They took on Andre the Giant and Ted DiBiase. I believe this was after Macho Man won the heavyweight title.
Yeah.
With the help of Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 8 months later, February 1989, things started going sour.
Yeah.
For the Mega Powers.
Yeah.
Again, on Saturday night, Main Event, they were wrestling the Twin Towers.
One man gang.
Yeah.
AKA Hakim.
Yeah, threw Macho Man out of the ring into Elizabeth.
Oh, no.
Knocking her out. Hogan decided to not wrestle the match anymore and carried Elizabeth backstage. So Macho Man was there to wrestle the Twin Towers all by himself.
All by himself.
So.
Why didn't Hogan say, "Randy, you take her back to the med room, I'll take care of these, brother"? I think Hogan was trying to get a little feel action. He was trying to...
Maybe. Anyways, Elizabeth finally came to. Hogan went back out to the ring, looked for the tag. Savage said,
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be the last time that Hogan had some dealings with a friend's wife.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Macho Man said, I'm done with this. Went backstage. They had a huge argument.
Yeah.
Backstage.
That argument looked legit, too. I know. Pretty sure that was real.
And that led to...
I think the Mega Powers actually broke up.
I don't think that was storyline. Yeah,
I think that was an actual argument.
And this all led to a match at WrestleMania 5.
Yeah.
Where Hogan reclaimed the WWF title. And it's an interesting match because the first half of the match feels very much like a Macho Man match. Mm-hmm. The energy's good. Pace relatively quick.
Yeah.
Some false finishes, near falls. Right. And then the second half just turns into a pretty basic Hogan match where he no-sells everything and just throws a lot of punches.
Oh, man. Yeah. Was it Tuesday Night Titans?
I remember watching as in the mid-80s,
yeah.
Saturdays on the USA Network. That's what I remember.
On the USA Network. Was it Primetime Wrestling?
No, because it was on during the day. It's on like Saturday afternoons.
Well, it doesn't have to be actually prime time. Hold on.
I guess not. Wait.
Let's see here. A 2-hour weekly program. There you go. So this is the forerunner to Raw.
They just taped everything back then.
From 85 to 93. Why did things take so long back then? I just figured because they were on TV that long.
No, they were on every week.
Oh, man. What the heck?
Wrestling's had weekly television for decades. For
decades, apparently. And I'm the guy with the wrestling podcast. I didn't watch it back then, though, man. I'm good from Attitude Era on, man. Don't ask me these classic questions.
You didn't get to see the Mega Power story unfold.
No, I didn't. I didn't know. I didn't know that Hogan was ever a good guy. I just knew him from NWO. I thought he was always the bad guy. And then
I know that's not true. First of all,
no. You know, my first exposure to wrestling was actually the cartoon.
I know.
So, and I always knew, oh, Hulk Hogan, he's cool.
Rock and Wrestling.
Yeah, Rock and Wrestling. So I knew that. That was weekly. But I knew they advanced storylines hella quick, like in a span of an hour.
They're self-contained.
You had set up and blow off by the end of the 30 minutes.
It's a self-contained episode.
All right, what's next? Number five.
Five.
Edge and Christian.
Edge and Christian had been friends for a long time before ever debuting in WWF.
Oh, man, yeah, they knew each other forever.
Yeah, they were... lived in the same neighborhood, I think.
Something like that.
I went to wrestling school together,
yeah.
Wrestled in the indies together,
yep.
As a tag team using various names before coming to WWF
mm-hmm.
in 98. Edge, you know, debuting in those vignettes that were always saying, you think you know me.
You think you know me.
You think you know me.
Weren't they just, he was just malingering about town, like at night.
Yeah.
Like in various alleyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he'd just be like sitting somewhere in the arena too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He always had sunglasses on inside.
Yeah.
It was weird.
And his Matrix jacket.
Yeah. People loved the Matrix back then, dude.
They did. Christian debuted shortly thereafter as a member of the Brood.
Mm-hmm.
And in storyline, he was Edge's brother.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So there's a storyline about Christian trying to get Edge to join the Brood, which he did. And then they eventually both split, turning face. And they went on to hold the tag team title seven times. Seven times.
Edge did a lot of neat things.
He did a lot of neat things, including winning the King of the Ring in 2001.
Can that please be next week's count out?
Okay.
The top 10 neatest things Edge did.
Sure, I like that idea.
Because Edge did a lot of neat things, Larson.
He did. He did a lot of neat things. I mean, we might have to do three countdowns.
That might have to be like a whole month-long spectacular.
The month of Edge. Edge month.
Edgeuary.
Edge-tember.
Edge-tember is the only other, yeah. All right, anyways.
Edge won the 2001 King of the Ring. And again, jealousy became an issue, breaking apart a tag
team. Why can't any of these people just be? You know what, man? If you found solo success, as long as it didn't hurt my bottom line, I'd be very happy for you.
Likewise.
Yeah, exactly.
So
You fully support my solo Steve here channel?
Yeah, do what you want.
Do you watch my shows?
Not at all.
No. Oh, no. Anyways, continue.
I barely have time to watch what we do.
I don't watch ours. Sometimes I'll listen to us on a jog.
I wish I had time to watch your stuff. There's not enough hours in the day. I have like
there's
12 hours.
There's nothing in there that you don't already know.
There's 12 hours of wrestling a week or something like that I have to watch.
There's nothing in there that you want to see.
So anyways, September 3rd, Raw's War.
Yeah.
In Toronto, their hometown.
What?
Just laughing. Do you watch my stuff? Not at all.
Not at all.
Came off such a dick.
I know. It's great.
I'm sorry. Christian appeared. Christian hit Edge. Did a concerto to him. Hit him in the head with a chair. Probably unprotected.
Didn't he hit him with a trophy too or something?
Probably, yeah. Edge had a trophy for being king of the ring.
Oh, yeah. He insisted on carrying Edge's trophy to the ring. That's right.
And so Christian turned heel, joined the Alliance.
Ugh, the Alliance.
And they went on to have a program over the Intercontinental title.
What would be the point of him joining the Alliance? That didn't make any sense.
The whole Alliance thing didn't make any sense anyways.
It made loose sense. But Christian was never in ECW nor in WCW.
Well, it made sense until Stone Cold joined.
Yeah, I know, because they all, you know, WCW fired him, like, unceremoniously.
I know, there was really no motivation for him to join the Alliance.
And then ratings tanked, and, yeah, never been the same.
Nope.
But anyways, they went on a feud over the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah, I said that already.
For a couple months. Oh, okay, cool. Right.
Are you hurt that I don't watch the material?
No, I don't want you to. I'd probably talk a lot of shit about you and that stuff. I'm like, hey, welcome to my Impact review. Idiot's not here today.
It's nothing you probably don't say on Twitter sometimes.
I know, exactly, yeah. Garbage isn't here.
Yeah, what was all that about?
It was funny, because I find the term garbage hilarious.
I thought that was your passive-aggressive way of telling me not to come over that day.
No. I was like, oh, look, it's Father's Day. Oh, that's not my dad. It's just Garbage Larson. That's funny. The term garbage is hilarious.
Not when it's used as an adjective before me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. I don't watch your stuff. It's fine. We're equal now.
Yeah, okay. All right.
It's fine.
That's fine. You don't have to watch my stuff. Unless you want to know what's going on in Impact, then you can watch my stuff.
No, I really don't.
YouTube.com/MFSteve.
I used to watch NXT from time to time.
Yeah, NXT was good.
Yeah, I watched it.
I might bring it back.
But I haven't watched your Impact stuff.
There's nothing to watch. Number four.
Four.
The Steiner Brothers, you fat bastard.
You know, I was kind of surprised that I would assume that the Steiner Brothers started wrestling together, but that's not the case. Rick started first.
No. I thought Scott Steiner ended up in the Florida territory, and then the general manager there teamed him up with Rick Steiner, who was already there.
That happened in WCW, 1989.
I was talking about Legends of Wrestling.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
You'd be a perfect fit for Rick
Steiner. Like I said, I don't even watch our own stuff.
For Rick Steiner. You played the game with me. You were there when it happened. We both got a good hearty chuckle.
Apparently, I didn't absorb any of it.
I guess not.
So, yeah, WCW, they started tagging together January 1989. And within 10 months, they were your NWA Tag Team Champions.
Wait, you said so Rick was there first?
That was the impression I got.
Okay, Rick was wrestling first before Scott. Rick is older.
Yes.
That makes some sense.
Yes. Right. They defeated the Fabulous Freebirds.
Oh, no.
Which, of course, is Michael Hayes and Jimmy Garvin.
Okay, well, that's not the real Freebirds.
All right. And they would go on to win.
Do you consider that real Freebirds? No.
I would
real ask. Real Freebirds, like 1983.
I would ask what Michael Hayes' thoughts on it were. If he considered it real Freebirds. It might not be prime Freebirds.
Okay, if fast forward 5 years from now, you're not here and Hilton's here, and ask anybody, would you consider that real going in Raw? No, it was when Larson was there.
If the views were better and the revenue was better, then yes, it would be.
Okay, good point. Anyways, so they beat the fake Freebirds.
Yeah, and they would go on to win 16 tag team championships all over the world.
My God.
They were very successful.
You know, if Scott just wasn't like crazy-ish or perceived as crazy, I don't want to call him crazy. I don't think somebody who's crazy can run a Shoney's in Ackworth. Do you think somebody who's crazy can like run a restaurant?
It depends on the kind of crazy.
Like successfully. I mean, anybody can do anything.
It depends on the issue.
Really, yeah. Like, oh, I'm going to threaten Hulk Hogan.
I mean, I guess so, because he's running a
show. I guess he can, huh? It's a bummer that the Steiner brothers are not in the Hall of Fame.
I know.
That's an absolute bummer.
Well, you know, Scott Steiner, I think, recently said that he didn't want to be in the Hall of Fame anyways, because it's not a real place.
Of course he's going to say that, because he's never going to be invited.
Because he said it doesn't have an address.
Oh, man. Could you imagine his speech? It'd be amazing.
It would be a train wreck.
Oh, it'd be fantastic.
Absolute train wreck. So Scott Steiner started to turn heel on his brother all the way back like in late 97. He ditched the mullet,
mm-hmm.
grew a goatee.
Yeah.
Anybody with a goatee, you know what
that
means.
Oh, yeah, they're evil.
Yeah.
Totally evil.
Yeah. And I remember watching when this was unfolding where they'd have matches. And Scott would be in the wrestling, would never tag in Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Just wouldn't do it. For whatever reason.
Yeah.
Guess he thought, I mean, this is when he was getting all huge. Oh, he was really working on
it. Be careful there. Watch the R word. He's getting real ripped.
Huge, I said.
Yeah, big.
Huge.
Yeah.
He was really working on his peaks.
Yeah. He must have wrecked his peaks at a record pace.
Yeah, no.
I think he did.
Yeah, really.
Anyways, so he started a feud. Did you already mention the Buff Bagwell feud?
No.
He started a feud with Buff Bagwell, who had the better physique, and he developed a short fuse with his temper. Yeah, that was kind of interesting to me. Like, all of a sudden, he was a complete hothead, where I don't think he was that before. He always seemed fairly mild-mannered prior to this.
Yeah, but I think he was still known as a pretty stiff worker.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, they're always stiff workers.
Yeah, so this whole thing came to a head at Super Brawl 8. February 1998.
Nice.
When the Steiners took on the Outsiders for the WCW Tag Championships.
Mm-hmm.
During the match, Rick sent both Hall and Nash outside of the ring.
Was it over the top rope? Was it a DQ?
Well, by this point, I'm assuming that that wasn't a DQ.
Mm.
He was celebrating. Scott entered the ring and attacked him, gave him a powerbomb, and then Scott left. Outsiders won.
Mm-hmm.
Scott comes back in, gives Hall and Nash the belts. Mm-hmm. He's NWO for life.
The next night, I was there.
Well, we were there.
At WCW Nitro here in Sacramento.
Yes.
And we saw the debut of what they tried to call him what, Larson? Come on. So you remember this.
White Thunder?
Yes. Very good. White Thunder. That lasted, I think, just that night.
Yeah.
And then he was just Scott Steiner. He dyed his hair that iconic shade of like blistering white. And then he had that weird goatee, started putting all sorts of weird tattoos on him. And he became the Scott Steiner that we've grown.
He was Big Papa Pump.
To know and love. Number three.
Three.
The Shield. This was pretty dramatic. So the Shield massively, massively over faction comprised, of course, of Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, and Seth Rollins.
Yes.
Architect debuted November 18, 2012, and they helped CM Punk retain the WWE title against, I believe, Ryback, right?
And John Cena.
Oh, it was a triple threat. Okay. And John Cena then. The Shield went undefeated for an undisclosed number
for a long time. I forgot to fill that space okay. in, but they went undefeated for a while. Rollins and Reigns defeated Team Hell No,
mm-hmm.
become the tag team champions, Extreme Rules 2003, and they held those titles till October 2013. Did I say 2003? Sorry, Extreme Rules 2013 before October 2013 when they lost them, I believe, to Cody Rhodes and Goldust.
Oh, that sounds right.
And then they turned face, of course, took on Evolution for a while. And then shortly after that, Rollins turned on the Shield.
He was the plan B pill for Triple H.
Yes. On a June 2nd, 2014 episode of Raw.
Yeah.
Hit both Dean and his former tag team champion, Roman Reigns, in the back with chairs.
It's pretty rare.
Chair.
Pretty rare that the WWE doesn't run something into the ground before they make a change to
it.
Oh,
I know.
And so the fact that these guys...
You could argue they broke up the Shield the very peak of their popularity.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. When they were the most over, Triple H and Orton, of course, part of the Authority.
They were Evolution. They
were Evolution, okay.
And earlier in the night,
Batista
left.
Oh, Rollins, yeah, okay. And then Rollins showed up, and then they became the Authority. Yeah, he said, always have a plan B. And Rollins took a chair first to Roman Reigns, and then it was great because Dean Ambrose sold it perfectly, turns around and gets blasted with a chair.
Yep.
And Rollins, his old catchphrase, I didn't sell out.
I bought in
on Seth Rollins. Of course, he went on to become, they all became WWE champion
at least once.
Yeah, at least once.
Seth Rollins is also responsible for the greatest cash-in Money in the Bank briefcase history.
In history,
took place at WrestleMania 31.
Yeah.
When he cashed in, took the WWE title from Brock Lesnar by defeating Roman Reigns in the main event of WrestleMania that year. Held the belt for 7 months or so before blowing out his knee at a house show. A match against Kane.
Yeah, by the time Seth Rollins' career is over, we're going to be able to do several lists of the neatest things Seth Rollins has done. Because he's done a lot of neat things.
He has done a lot of neat things.
Yeah.
And he's the new cover athlete for WWE 2K18.
I know. It's exciting.
It's pretty cool.
Good for him. Number two.
Two.
DIY.
This is one of the more recent turns, but gosh darn it.
Boy, oh boy. It was a fantastic one.
It was.
It was a heartbreaking one.
So, if I remember correctly, DIY were just kind of put together to take... part in the first Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic.
If I recall correctly, they just sort of appeared in William Regal's office during one of those cheesy office segments they do. And they just showed up and, yeah, I mean, there were two, you know, names that were fairly big on the independent circuit, you know, they're always, you know, probably catch them always at the PWG shows, of course. And yeah, they were brought in and sort of, you know, put together as a tag team for the Dusty Classic in 2015. They advanced in the first round of the tournament, defeating Tyler Breeze and Bull Dempsey.
Bull Fit.
Remember Bull Fit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got eliminated in the second round, losing to the team of Baron Corbin and Rhino. Remember that?
Why was Baron Corbin in the tag team? His whole shtick is I'm lone wolf guy.
I didn't think he and Rhino wanted to be partners. They advanced to the finals, though, didn't they? They took on Finn Balor and Samoa Joe.
Oh, yeah, that sounds so. Right. Yeah, okay.
And then shortly after that, they... I think they're kind of working on like a freelance deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then, well, Ciampa, it was said in April
of 2016, right?
2016, it said Ciampa had signed with WWE earlier in the week. His NXT contract was a, quote, tier two contract, which allowed him to continue working independent dates alongside his now regular NXT bookings. So there, he was the tier two. I'd never heard of tiers.
Neither
NXT
did I.
Tiers.
And it was in July.
What do you think Bobby Roode's contract is?
Oh, he's tier one. Exclusive.
You don't think you don't think he's like tier five? Like, I don't know if it gets better, like more exclusive the higher you go. I would think one is like developmental. Like, you can't do anything. Not allowed to talk to anybody. Only can eat the food that they serve you.
Or maybe it's tier two is kind of like your part-time WWE.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Tier one is your exclusive.
That could be. That could be.
I don't know.
Maybe tier three is crap tier.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyways, Johnny Gargano signed on full-time with NXT July 2016.
Okay. All right.
And that was after... That was before. Sorry. Before they appeared in the very first Cruiserweight Classic.
Oh, and
they had
classic,
a stellar match.
A classic match. It was fantastic. These two guys... I mean, the funny thing is, like... So they didn't have much of a history together as a team before they came to NXT. They had never teamed up, as far as I know. But in the short amount of time that from them going through the Dusty Classic, they really made you feel the relationship between these two guys.
Yes, and that was their story, is these guys who you know, were kind of put together and became friends and basically became brothers.
Yeah, but there was never anything like they never did any like – real like vignettes, like you think of the Roderick Strong vignette,
yeah,
which you know they haven't done a lot of those, but like there was none of that. It was just like these guys would just tell the story either in the ring or through commentary or whatever,
or a little short interview segment,
or a little
maybe.
Short, exactly, yeah. And you just felt the chemistry between the two of them. Like, we used to joke that they look like a father son tag team, and that was kind of apropos.
And they not only did they forge a pretty significant bond, but they formed a really solid bond with the NXT crowd.
Right, yeah, totally, absolutely.
And I think as they grew closer, they as a team grew closer with the NXT universe.
I think this also, you know, it was kind of interesting because so you have guys like the Vaudevillains, who is like a totally a gimmick. But then you had guys like American Alpha. They always have like really interesting tag team situations in NXT, especially around this time. You had American Alpha getting together, who was, again, you know, one side of it was, you know, Jason Jordan was a reluctant tag team partner to Chad Gable, who was all in on it.
Yeah.
And they got together and they had a lot of success in NXT before they went to Maine and...
Prematurely.
And then you had guys, you know, then you had Gargano and Ciampa. And I don't know, it was just, it's, you forge a bond with these guys as a fan of the product because they're sort of thrown into the situation together. And they're making the most of it, and they're really giving it their all. Like, all their matches were fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
And so anyways, they ended up getting super over with the crowd and eventually became NXT Tag Team Champions after beating The Revival on June 1st of 20...
No. They won them, they won the Tag Team Championships at NXT Toronto last
November.
Oh,
okay. All right.
They tried the first time, NXT Brooklyn 2.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't win. We were there for that. Great match. Stellar match.
Yeah.
But they finally won at Toronto and then lost them NXT San Antonio
to
Authors of Pain.
Yeah. So they didn't have them very long. They were sort of sandwiched between two really, really great heel tag teams, The Revival and Authors of Pain. And it's very surprising. Very surprising. Like, so they had that final match against the Authors of Pain, and I did not see that coming. At the very end of the match, they lost, and Ciampa turned on Gargano and just viciously, savagely beat him down. And the reaction that the crowd had, that Gargano had, like a puppy who was being beat by his owner. Oh, my goodness. It was heartbreaking.
It really was.
Fantastic. Of course, it's because Tommaso Ciampa got injured in a house show match, I think.
Yeah, a few days before their TakeOver Chicago match, yeah.
Yeah, and so he comes out the following episode of NXT and drops a great promo saying, you know, I'm not going to be replaced by anybody. I'm going to be on the shelf for 6 months or whatever it is.
And he didn't want to see Gargano becoming a huge star while he was out.
Right,
so
exactly.
He put him on the shelf as well.
I mean, at the end of the day, Ciampa's nickname is Psycho Killer.
Mm-hmm.
Can't really trust the guy called Psycho Killer is not going to swerve you.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, probably not. Number one.
One.
The Rockers.
So Mario Jannetty and Shawn Michaels started tagging together in 1985.
Very, very long time
ago. They were
ago.
Put together when they were in an organization called NWA Central States Wrestling.
That's the best name I've ever heard.
Next year, they signed with AWA. And they dubbed themselves the Midnight Rockers.
Yeah.
But apparently Vern Gagne, the owner of AWA, didn't get it.
Yeah.
He thought Rockers was like a rocking chair.
That's awesome. That's great. I think he actually still let them, like,
he
was still cool with it, though.
Yeah, he just didn't understand it.
But you have to appreciate, I don't know what, rocking chairs? All right, whatever you guys want to do, it's fine.
Just get it over. That's all I care about.
You guys know what it's like being rich.
No, Vern. they were there for about a year, and they signed a contract with WWF. Were briefly there for a little bit in 1987, but were fired.
You're fired!
And then the next year, after wrestling in AWA, and I think in Memphis too, they came back to WWF. Full-time, 1988, renamed the Rockers.
Mm-hmm.
Got pretty darn popular.
Yeah, it's crazy because, like, you think, oh, the Rockers, yeah, total tag team champions. No, they actually unofficially held the WWF tag team champions.
And very briefly. So they beat the Hart Foundation on October 30th, 1990 during a television taping in a 2 out of 3 falls match. Jim the Anvil, Neidhart, was in the process of being let go by the WWF. But they changed their mind. They brought him back. And the WWF decided not to recognize or ever air the title change. They put the titles back on the Hart Foundation. So that match never aired, and the Rockers' very short reign as tag champions was never officially recognized.
Yeah, non-canon.
Yes.
Didn't actually happen.
Didn't happen. Fast forward, January 1992, episode of Brutus Beefcake's Barbershop. Swerve happened. So there was the Rockers were having trouble on camera, kayfabe.
Yeah.
Also backstage.
Yes.
Leading up to this segment, and Brutus trying to be a mediator.
Yeah. Peacemaker.
Yes. Brought them together to work out their problems, and it seemed at first they did until Shawn Michaels super kicked Marty Jannetty and then threw him headfirst through a window.
Yeah. Just remember, dude, if I ever show up to a mediation session. Between you and I.
Yeah.
And I'm wearing black leather and sunglasses. Chances are you're eating a super kick or a power bomb.
You know
what
would really be the kicker is if you have a goatee too.
I can't grow a goatee, man. So
well, that's good to know. So
if
now
if you see some more dirt up in here, it doesn't mean I can't be evil. If you see some more dirt up
no,
here,
I'm just saying if
area,
you suddenly grow somehow a goatee.
Oh, then I'm fully evil.
Yeah, I know to find employment elsewhere.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because I'm gonna get swerved.
Go call Hilton, man. Absolutely. Oh no, call Ulysses and then be like, dude, you can't swear as much as you do. This is a new day in YouTube. Anyways,
so we mentioned they were having trouble not only in front of cameras
but this is so sad.
The cameras,
this is really sad. Like, imagine, dude, I mean, honestly, it kind of is like, you know, you and I have known each other for 20 years now, and it's like we've established ourselves in this career because of each other.
Yeah.
And it's like these guys start out in the most podunk way possible. What was the name of that NWA?
Central States Wrestling.
What in the heck? In 1985, 1986, they landed in AWA. They were both in WWF and fired. Then a year later, they came back. So these guys traveled at least the country, maybe even the world together.
And went pretty far in the span of 3 years.
And found a lot of success. And then, but yeah, it's like behind the scenes.
They were fighting over money.
Yeah. The short route is they were fighting over money. Then in 1991. So, dude, this is like 6 years later after 6 years. I'm sorry. 6 years after they started out together.
Yeah.
Roddy, they're all drunk, which is
yeah.
First off bad. This is according to this is a DVD extra on the Shawn Michaels autobiography, Heartbreak and Triumph.
Okay. Yeah. Piper was talking about how much he liked Shawn Michaels. And he said, quote, Michaels had a great future in the business and that Michaels had all this talent. And then Marty Jannetty took exception of this, thinking, I guess, that he was on Shawn's level. And he wanted to fight Shawn Michaels.
What the heck?
First, Shawn Michaels said no.
Yeah.
And then eventually Jannetty just hit him. Piper pulled him apart.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Shawn Michaels, whether it be because of booze or a fist to the face, was out.
Yeah.
And I guess they were going to arrest Marty Jannetty until Macho Man said, hey, this is all part of storyline. Don't worry about it.
That's great. Okay, yeah. Macho Man. Hey, listen, this is all part of it. So Macho Man, he had to like lower the curtain on the business.
A little bit.
To those broke cops. Kayfabe. He broke kayfabe to the cops. Oh, yeah, it's all fake, man. It's all part of the storyline. Don't tell anybody. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's between you and me. Dig it.
There's all sorts of hidden cameras in this bar. Yeah. Look forward to Primetime Wrestling next week.
I'll give you an autograph.
So, anyways, they broke up early 92, and it, you know, you'd expect a feud to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't because Jannetty left the company. Apparently due to an incident that happened at a Tampa nightclub. Shortly after the breakup,
he was arrested with charges of resisting arrest with force. What was Jannetty? Did Jannetty have a finisher? Would he have a finisher?
I don't remember.
Was it just a super kick?
Probably.
Okay. Cocaine possession and possession of drug paraphernalia, forcing the feud to be abandoned at least temporarily. So he was suspended.
Yeah. And he came back on the October 31st, 1992 edition of WWF Superstars, so about 9 months later.
Again, you know, things were not, there was not weekly wrestling TV.
There was, in fact, there was. So apparently, you know, Shawn Michaels at this time had a sensational Sherry as his manager. He'd bring out a mirror, pose, and preen in front of said mirror. Well, Marty attacked Shawn, got a hold of the mirror, tried to break it over Shawn Michaels.
Mm-hmm.
Shawn grabbed Sensational Sherry, put Sherry in front of him, so Sherry had the mirror broken over. And this led to a match at Royal Rumble 93 between Michaels and Jannetty for Shawn Michaels' Intercontinental title. Shawn Michaels won.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't see Marty Jannetty in WWF until May 17th of the following year, so another 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
Challenged HBK for the Intercontinental title. Won it,
yeah.
Only to lose it back to Michaels at a house show, thanks to Diesel,
Kevin Nash,
Diesel,
yeah.
And then that was kind of the end of it,
yeah.
Although Marty made what an appearance like 12 years later Raw.
You know, Marty came back a couple times.
Yeah,
it's just he never feuded with Michaels. After
but didn't
that.
He come back for a segment with Shawn at one point?
Yeah, you're talking about like it was, I believe, what was it? He was either Kurt Angle or Chris Jericho. I think it was a feud with Kurt Angle.
Okay.
Or Chris Jericho, I forget. But yeah, they brought Marty back. Marty looked great. And the WWF, I think, actually wanted to keep him, but apparently personal issues got in the way of that happening. So even after all that time, he still hadn't gotten his act together. But no, you know, they try to form the New Rockers with Al Snow.
Yeah. He was Leaf Cassidy.
Leaf Cassidy, yeah. And so he actually came back like on a fairly relatively regular basis.
Yeah.
I think up until like the Attitude Era. So like 5 years or so.
And he was in WCW for a little bit too.
Yeah. He was in WCW for a bit too. But yeah. And I saw something with Marty Jannetty where he was being interviewed and they said, you know, how do you feel about when people derisively refer to a member of a tag team as the Marty Jannetty of the two? And he says, well, you know what? Everybody I was with found a lot of success, so I just take it that way. And that's a positive way to take it. Hopefully Marty's doing okay these days. I haven't checked up on him anytime recently.
I
did. I saw him. He was wrestling some event. I know he's still wrestling. So, yeah, hopefully he's doing good.
Yes.
Anyways, that's it for the top 10 tag team breakups. As long as you're helping me bring in the cash, I don't see this tag team breaking up anytime soon.
Likewise.
Yeah.
We don't have to watch each other's stuff, but as long as this keeps making money, that's all that matters.
If you want to know what's going on Impact, you know where to go, buddy.
Yes, please do watch the show. I'm sure it's good.
No, it's not. Anyways, until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.